a good chance for the two major countries in Asia to get together and try to create some positive momentum.
Traditional Asian rivals agree to work together. It's Tuesday, April 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, how a missile attack in Syria might affect U.S.-North Korean talks. North Korean workers seem to find ways into China. Australia's military deals with mental health concerns, the opioid crisis, and vine climbing robots. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Traditional rivals Japan and China said they agreed to improve ties and affirmed the need to abide by UN Security Council resolutions that call on North Korea to abandon its nuclear program. Japanese Foreign Affairs Minister Taro Kono met in Tokyo with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi, who called for talks on macroeconomic policies, economic cooperation, the One Belt, One Road initiative, and East Asian economic integration. He said he hopes both countries can develop understanding, trust, and cooperation by deepening communication on a strategic and practical level. Asian Studies professor Jeff Kingston of Tokyo's Temple University tells VOA's Victor Beatty, bilateral ties have been in the deep freeze since Prime Minister Shinzo Abe came to power in 2012.
And the two countries have been at odds over their rival claims for the Senkaku Diaoyu Islands. They've been also at odds over their shared history. So a lot of observers believe that a good chance for the two major countries in Asia to get together and try to create some positive momentum. But clearly there are obstacles ahead.
Such as?
Well, there's been actually an increase of Chinese incursions into the seas around the Senkaku Islands this year. And during the meeting, Foreign Minister Wang pointedly referred to the need to stabilize the situation in the East China Sea. I don't think that that problem is going to go away, but I think it would be in the interest of both countries to return to the shelving accord that they previously had up until 2010.
They also talked about North Korea.
So I think Japan is very eager to enlist China's support for maximizing pressure on Pyongyang to come to the talks and to promote denuclearization. Also, I think Japan, in a way, has been marginalized from this diplomatic process. And so China, you know, has had much more interaction with Kim. He visited President Xi recently, and there's been more follow-up visits. So I think that the Chinese foreign minister was letting his counterpart know what's going on behind the scenes.
Jeff, Prime Minister Abe, of course, travels to the U.S. this week to meet with President Trump. What might go on with that meeting?
Certainly, there's lots of things going on, but clearly the bromance is on the rocks. Abe has nurtured a close relationship with President Trump. He has stroked his ego up and down. And suddenly, you know, Trump slaps tariffs on Japanese steel and aluminum. And the aim of the tariffs is actually China, but America's close allies, Japan and Canada, are actually going to suffer a lot more. So I think Abe is concerned that Trump is sort of handing over the baton of free trade, and he wants him to try to resolve his problems with China by other means. Also, Trump has brooded the possibility that the United States might rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's always hard to know with this erratic president what exactly he'll do. What he says often is quite different, but it is a possibility, and I think that the organization would be much stronger with U.S. participation. But Trump also signaled he wanted to get a better deal than Obama. He's always trying that one-upsmanship, and that's not going to go down well with the other 11 countries. And so I think that this is going to be on the to-do list. There's not going to be a very quick resolution.
Jeff Kingston said Japan is concerned a meeting between the United States and North Korean leaders will not address Japan's security regarding the North's nuclear arsenal or the fate of abducted Japanese by North Korea in the last century. It's a key political issue for Mr. Abe. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Consumers in China weigh options as trade frictions simmer. Former South Korean president will not appeal prison sentence. U.S. strike on Syria sends mixed messages to North Korea. Bangladesh rejects Myanmar's Rohingya repatriation claim. Jailed Chinese pastors, U.S. family seeks mercy. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The recent U.S. missile strikes against Syria could increase pressure on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons or reinforce in Pyongyang the need for nuclear deterrence. The United States, France, and Britain fired 105 missiles at three Syrian chemical weapons facilities Saturday in response to an alleged Syrian chemical weapons attack in the city of Douma that killed at least 40 people and wounded or sickened hundreds of others. The Syrian government has repeatedly denied any use of banned weapons. The combined military strike on Syria comes as the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump and the government of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un are preparing for an expected summit in late May or early June to discuss dismantling the North's nuclear program in exchange for security guarantees. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about this with Andrea Taylor of the Atlantic Council's Hari Center for the Middle East.
I think that the U.S.'s latest actions alongside the U.K. and France actually increases our leverage and will assist with negotiating with North Korea. I believe that the U.S. decision to respond with force when we said that we would not tolerate the use of chemical weapons then demonstrates that the United States will follow through with what it says it will.
So what is your reasoning behind your view of what the North Korea reasoning might be?
Ultimately, the North Korea needs to be considering what is the potential cost for their actions, whether their actions are continuing to do what they're doing now, or if their actions are proceeding with negotiating with the U.S. and potentially denuclearizing. So with the actions by the U.S. and Syria, it's shown that North Korea should be considering as a potential cause is U.S. response with the use of force if they do not follow through with the agreement.
North Korea, as you know, has long justified the need for its nuclear program by pointing to what happened to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. He was overthrown and killed by U.S. and NATO-backed rebel forces just a few years after he agreed to give up his country's nuclear weapons. How do you factor that in?
The action to give up nuclear weapons would have to be a part of a more concerted effort of North Korea to align itself more closely with what are considered international norms. And with that, if they did decide to denuclearize, I expect it would be in conjunction with other actions that they might take that would reduce the likelihood of the international community deciding that they would push for something like regime change.
How do you answer those who say they might go the other way and look for it as a need for nuclear deterrence?
Obviously, it requires that there be pressure on North Korea to denuclearize. But if in that process there is some mechanism or some steps that they are pressuring North Korea to take and a mechanism to enforce that, then North Korea should, given the latest action by the U.S. and its allies, expect that those steps will be taken to enforce the agreement.
What kind of history and what kind of connections are there between North Korea and Syria?
There is evidence of, particularly coming out more recently, of whether it's materials or also information that has been shared between North Korea and Syria. I don't know the exact extent of that, but that is something that there's been indications of in the recent years and is another reason why it's important for the United States and its allies to put pressure on North Korea to denuclearize, because a nuclear North Korea isn't only at risk because of the technology that it has by itself, it's also a risk because it can share that technology with other actors that are not necessarily allies of the U.S.
Do you expect the bombing raid on Syria to have any effect on the, I guess now, planned negotiations between Donald Trump and the North Korean leader?
I do think that at least in terms of affecting their attitudes, I expect that the bombing raids may influence President Trump's attitudes in negotiating with North Korea. I expect he'll enter those discussions with increased confidence because of the actions that had just been taken. Does that have the potential to backfire? Yes, but I do expect it might influence the discussions in that way.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Andrea Taylor of the Atlantic Council's Hariri Center for the Middle East. Happening now in Asia, the Chinese government says strikes on Syria violate the basic principles and norms of international law. A foreign ministry spokesman said China has always been advocates of the peaceful settlement of disputes and opposed the use of force and intimidation in international relations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Video obtained by VOA's Korean service earlier this month shows a group of North Korean laborers entering China in a possible violation of United Nations sanctions. The video, which has not been properly authenticated by VOA, raises some new concerns over the sincerity of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's recent diplomatic overtures. Jesus Manoni has more.
North Korea's Kim Jong-un is showing the world a different side, easing a strained relationship with Beijing, watching a soccer match with the head of the International Olympic Committee, and attending a rare K-pop concert in Pyongyang. But these images of North Korean workers reportedly crossing the border into China have raised new questions. The video captured on April 2nd was distributed by a North Korean refugee aid group, but has yet to be authenticated. The UN Security Council has imposed increasingly tough sanctions against Pyongyang in a bid to cut off funding to its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. In addition to import and export restrictions, UN member countries are also required not to give work permits to new North Korean laborers and to send existing workers home.
Some Chinese companies are really short of workers. North Korean workers are dirt cheap. They want to have them. So they can bribe, they can make all kinds of deals in China that can break Chinese rules. Now, I wouldn't put it past China to be able to tell Kim Jong-un or tell North Korea, look, we're going to bend the rules.
A UN panel of investigators reported in March that Pyongyang has repeatedly evaded sanctions on oil and gas imports and continues to engage in illegal exports. Kim's trip to Beijing has also raised concerns that China may attempt to ease international restrictions against Pyongyang. Sources tell VOA's Korean service the Chinese border control has already pulled back in some rural areas of the North Korean border since Kim's visit.
I suspect a lot of this is going on all the time, that North Koreans are sneaking over, finding Chinese employers who want to employ them and making some kind of deal. I suspect the Chinese government has a hard time controlling all that, just like our government has a hard time with illegal immigrants. They would have a hard time also.
The growing rift between the United States and China over trade issues could have an adverse effect on efforts to rein in North Korea's nuclear program.
With regards to China, I think that there does need to be within the administration a sense of prioritization. Are trade issues most important? Are security issues most important? If we want Chinese cooperation, what is the trade space that he's prepared to think about with regards to these other issues? And conversely, with regards to things like trade issues and tariffs and the possibility of a trade war, what is the trade space with regards to North Korea?
China insists it's in full compliance with international obligations against North Korea. Jason Samaoni, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, concerns for many of Australia's military veterans. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia. Top Japanese finance official Junichi Fukuda is denying sexual harassment allegations and has vowed to sue a weekly magazine's publisher for defamation. The allegations come amid a string of controversies surrounding dodgy financial deals facing Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the latest developments to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, almost half of the Australian military personnel who have left the Defence Force in the past 5 years have some sort of mental disorder, according to a new study. Phil Mercer in Sydney reports the Australian government says it is the most comprehensive study ever undertaken in Australia of the effect of military service on the mental, physical, and social health of veterans, including those who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
For many former Australian servicemen and women, adapting to civilian life can be tough. According to a new study by the Department of Veterans Affairs, about half suffer debilitating conditions that include anxiety and depression. Some retired soldiers, however, believe the true number of those affected is much higher. Robin Lee was in the Australian Army for 14 years and served in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder before he left the military in 2015. He says the system for helping veterans with mental health issues is poor.
These men are serving, getting problems. They know they have problems, but they have to go through a recognition process that is just disgusting, being mishandled at every level.
The Australian government acknowledges that leaving the military can be a daunting and challenging experience. The Veterans Affairs Minister is Darren Chester.
The government is determined to put veterans and their health at the centre of everything we do. We're putting veterans first, we're putting veterans' families first. In a nutshell, the research we're releasing today is confirming that we're heading in the right direction, but more needs to be done to assist veterans and their families during the critical transition of period to civilian life.
Ministers say that free treatment for any mental health condition is now available to all veterans. The research into the mental and physical impact of Australia's military service is continuing. Six further reports will be released by the end of next year. The Australian Defence Force comprises the Navy, Army and Air Force. It has more than 100,000 personnel, including permanent military personnel, reservists and civilian employees. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korea has celebrated the 106th anniversary of the birth of the late North Korea's founder, Kim Il-sung, with no signs of provocation. Past anniversaries have been marked by nuclear or missile tests or other provocative activities. The big stories are found online at VOA 60 and VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the opioid crisis leaves no community in the United States untouched. It has become a nationwide epidemic, but it's hitting small towns and rural states especially hard. VOA's Carol Pearson looks at the scope of the problem and what some states are doing to tackle the crisis.
In Bellevue, Ohio, Corianne Evans was driving with her two young children in the car when she started to overdose. She managed to hit the brakes before she passed out. Fortunately, she was taken to a hospital where doctors revived her before it was too late. She has since stopped taking opioids.
I almost killed my kids.
I didn't even have it in park. I could have flipped that car and killed them, or I could have killed other people.
Cody, where do you live?
In Manchester, New Hampshire, firefighters created a program to help addicts after one of the firefighters helped a colleague's brother who was addicted to drugs and on the verge of suicide.
No one agency can do this. No one city can do this. This has got to be an all-out, all-hands-on-deck effort to fix this thing nationwide.
Come on, buddy.
The Centers for Disease Control reports that more than 40,000 people died from opioid overdoses in 2016, a five-fold increase from 1999. The small town of Hannibal, Missouri, is where Dr. Jennifer Allen practices medicine.
I feel alone in Hannibal. In this area, there's no one else except our clinic for 2 hours.
Hannibal, Manchester, Bellevue. They're like many small towns across the U.S. They don't have resources to fight this epidemic. The University of Missouri School of Medicine uses video conferencing to help doctors in rural areas.
We have therapists, we have pharmacologists, we have primary care doctors and physicians, and really, I'd say as a group, there's a lot of expertise there.
This monitor shows doctors across the state getting training from specialists at the university.
They enter into a learning collaborative where it's friendly, where they can ask their questions, where they can present their patients and come up with a strategy that makes sense that will really help that patient.
In Missouri, one out of every 66 deaths is related to opioid or heroin overdoses.
36-year-old male, not conscious, is breathing, heroin overdose.
Doctors, firefighters, and police in small towns throughout the U.S. understand it will take a team approach to change the trajectory of this epidemic.
It's helping me to understand and say, okay, yes, we're doing things right, or no, here's something we can change or improve on.
Addicts need help without the fear of being stigmatized or arrested. The crisis has become so widespread that the Surgeon General is urging ordinary citizens to carry naloxone, a drug that reverses the effects of a drug overdose and saves lives. Medical experts say ending the crisis will indeed take a team made up of the entire nation. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
As we continue to track the amazing developments in technology, the next robot you see may have more in common with climbing pea plants than with people. Faith Lapidus explains how plants are inspiring a scientific team at Stanford University to develop the next generation of robots.
Vines like this black-eyed Susan can grow up and around almost anything, and so can soft robots.
You use the natural softness of nature to create ideas for how you would design new robots differently. The big idea of this project is to develop a robot that effectively grows out the tip. And we call these vine robots because they grow in a manner similar to how a plant would grow.
With support from the National Science Foundation, mechanical engineer Allison Okamura and a team at Stanford University are building soft robots inspired by vines. The inflatable robots are made of plastic or tough fabric, and their shape is ideal for threading through narrow spaces.
So this could include inside the human body for minimally invasive surgeries, getting into small areas that are otherwise inaccessible, for example, in search and rescue or disaster scenarios.
The robots are designed to carry instruments like cameras on the tip, so they could be completely autonomous, driving themselves based on the images received by the camera. Okamura says the unique thing about these robots is they can create their own shapes and structures.
Let's say you needed a ladder to escape a burning building. A vine robot could essentially tie itself into knots and weave itself into a shape that would allow you to use it to climb down off of something.
Mother Nature, inspiring scientists to create better tools and more adaptable robots. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Singapore is an interesting place to spend some time, and if you happen to be spending time there, spend a little time listening to us on Media Biz Radio, Temasek Polytechnic at Singapore. We thank everyone there who is listening today, and wherever you may happen to have caught our program, like online, iTunes and SoundCloud is a great place to download our program. You can hear us streaming each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, David Bird, and Ira Melman on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.